Members, I think we have a quorum, and so I'm going to call this meeting to order. And I know Representative Haas has been looking at the minutes with great diligence and would like to move them.
I would like to move the minutes. Be right on the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Haas. Any corrections or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. We have a couple bills up today. House File 908, Erdahl, Shared Work Employer Plans Extended to One Year. You know, I saw this, I think, in Consumer and Labor, and it was about four lines. What happened? It's now a page and a half or so.
Well, first, thank you, Chair Mahoney. And what happened is that Senator Stoltzman has a similar bill that she had worked on with Deed. And so basically, I did a delete all amendment, taking Senator Stoltzman's language and Deed's language, and that's what we have now.
Well, before we get too much farther down the line, I'll move House File 908. And where are we sending this? I think it has to go back to higher ed and workforce development policy and finance. So having moved that, which amendments are we working off of here, Representative Erdahl? The 908-1? That's the bill, correct?
I believe 908-A3.
Well, that would be the amendment. Is that a delete all amendment to the 901?
No, I don't want to delete all amendments.
All right. So I moved the 8-1, which is about, I don't know how many pages, five or six pages. That's the bill. And then I will move the A3 amendment to get it into the shape that the author wants. So, if you'll explain the bill and the amendment, and if you've got some testifiers, we'll proceed.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, wait, I'll move the amendment, you can explain it, and we'll figure out if we're going to vote on it or not. I know it's got a little controversy to it.
All right. So, do you want me to take the amendment first, then?
No, I'll explain the bill, and then explain what your amendment does.
Okay. The shared workers program allows workers to share hours or days with other workers, thus allowing an employer who might otherwise be forced to lay off workers to keep more employed at fewer hours. The program is through Deed and is for 1 year. There's a 6 month off time in the program, which is mandatory once the year is completed. This bill basically makes it a 2 year program, eliminating that 6 month off time, which is the time works in prosperous economic conditions, but in our current situation, this leads to the program basically ending after 1 year and workers possibly having to be laid off and then brought back again after 6 months, which just doesn't seem to make sense for a program that is working well. So this bill would drop this hiatus position, keeping workers employed, keeping them with benefits, and it came from the bill in 1994, federal law. This is the language from the federal model. It is supposed to be a bill that helps workers, helps employees, helps employers. And again, the language in this now is that has been worked on with Senator Stoltzman and with Deed. The amendment brought to me by the staffing industry.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Before we go to your amendment, I wanted to welcome to the committee the 12th grade students from Princeton High School. We appreciate you coming and joining us. Hopefully you're the government class and you're the next crop of legislators to come down here and work long hours, great glory, and no pay. So, Having said that, welcome to the committee, and I hope you learned something today. Two-year amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that I'll just have Mr. Hendrickson from the staffing industry explain it to you.
Good morning. My name is Dwayne Hendrickson, and I'm with a company called Masterson Personnel. Masterson has offices in many of your districts and employs people and many more. I'm here on behalf of the staffing industry, who employs over 200,000 people, Minnesotans, a year, 73% of which gain new skills and go on to work directly for companies in Minnesota. In 2005, there were some changes made to the UI bill that had a disproportionate effect on our industry. And we have been working with DEED, and we understand that these changes were unintended. But what's happened is that these changes have allowed employees who are coming off of assignments to turn down suitable employment. And when I say suitable, I mean employment that was considered suitable by the Department of Employment and Economic Development, not what we consider suitable. The changes in the 2005 bill allow employees to turn down the suitable employment. The employment could be right next door to where they're currently working. It can be the same money. It can be the same job responsibility. They can turn it down and draw unemployment, and staffing services after an 8-week period are being charged for those benefits. And so that is what we're attempting to do with this amendment, is to undo that 2005 change so that employees being offered suitable employment will be encouraged to accept the position, and as a company, we won't bear any further burden on doing business in the state of Minnesota. That's it in a nutshell. I appreciate you all considering it, and I understand that things are a lot more complicated than they appear to be, but thank you, Dean, for
I think we have another testifier.
Okay.
Ms. Dolphin.
Kathy Dolphin with Dolphin Staffing. My mom originally started our company in a basement as a widow with three children in 69, and I've taken over the leadership of that company since 84, and worked on and off with the Staffing Association to try to come over here and be a part of this process, which has been extremely time-consuming in a time when we really need to be back at our offices working on finding jobs for our people. But this is something we have worked with the department, as Dwayne said, for the last 3 years in trying to get a change. We worked with Lee Nelson on drafting this language. And all we're really trying to get at is our industry, because we do offer jobs in and out, that's the nature of our business, it's disproportionately affecting us. Of all the claims, I think Lee could probably answer better, but I'll try. Of all the claims that are put in regarding suitability, the staffing industry has 47% of those, whereas all other industries combined are at 53%. Now, I want to say that this isn't taking unemployment away from anyone. All we're talking about is people who reject a suitable, according to statute, job. If you reject a suitable offer, you should not be given unemployment. That's all we're asking for in this amendment. We pay plenty of unemployment when people call in times like these, when we don't have jobs. We have a lot of people that we are paying unemployment on. So it's really a negative effect on our industry to pay for people who are rejecting a job that is exactly similar to what they've been doing before in terms of geography, pay, and skill. That's all defined in statute when Dwayne says that we have to meet the state's requirements. You actually have a group of people who are turning that work down and then coming and collecting unemployment. And that's really all we're attempting to change. That's all I take questions, or?
How about if I,
Does
Deed want to come down and say any words, or are they trying to stay quiet today?
Deed wants it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. I drafted the amendment at the request of the staffing industry to make it work. The department does not endorse it. It's a little bit of a misnomer what this bill does. This bill increases the penalty on individuals who turn down employment with the staffing industry. It leaves in place the penalty for turning down a job with a permanent employer. I'll give you the example. If you're laid off,
quickly, Mr. Chairman, just so people don't misunderstand, you mean the amendment, not the bill.
The amendment, right. The amendment, excuse me. The amendment, let me explain the current law. Let's say you're laid off from 3M and you're collecting benefits for a few months, and 3M offers you your job back. You say no, for no reason. You just don't want to go back. You're currently denied benefits for 8 weeks. That's the law. What this bill does, it says, is if you're laid off from staffing industry, collect benefits for a bit, and are offered a job with the staffing industry, the penalty will be significantly higher than 8 weeks. It will be until you return to another job, work at least 8 times your weekly benefit amount, meaning you work for at least 4 weeks, and then get laid off due to lack of work. The significantly increased penalty for turning down a job with a temporary industry rather than if you turn down a, what you might call a permanent job. That's what the amendment does. So it does, in fact, significantly increase the penalty on individuals who would turn down a job with a staffing industry than current law. That would impact a little over 1,000 people a year would see an increased penalty and would be denied benefits who would currently collect after serving a penalty of 8 weeks.
Members, are there other people that wanted to testify for or against this bill? You don't have to raise your hand, just come on down. Are you for, you want to say good things or
thank you,
good things about this?
Members, my name is Jessica Webster. I'm with Legal Aid, and we are here to oppose this amendment. I apologize to Representative Erdahl and Mr. Hendrickson and Ms. Dolphin. We were only made aware of this amendment about an hour or an hour and a half ago. So we represent low-income people across the state. I believe Mr. Hendrickson said that 200,000 people from the staffing agency, they're representing, and that 73% of those go on to take permanent employment, get skills. So really you can think of me as being here to represent those 54,000 Minnesotans who aren't going on to permanent positions and permanent employment, that really are experiencing temporary employment through these agencies. We oppose this amendment for three reasons. One, Mr. Nelson just discussed, which is just a fairness issue. One, you're creating a harsher penalty for people turning down employment from a staffing agency rather than from permanent employment. And why this matters right now is that we see a growing number of clients coming to our offices who've been laid off from their position. Then they get offered their position back through a temp agency. It's the exact position, but it doesn't have the benefits with the position. And then they may get laid off again from the temp agency, which would put them in this bind that this amendment creates. Number two, and this is a less, I'm not saying that this would be the case at Dolphin or Masterson, but Legal Aid knows that there are staffing agencies out there that are offering people positions that they know people cannot take or will not take. And we've heard from former staffing agency workers who are guilty about that practice. We've heard from clients who are experiencing that practice, and it's something that we hope to be back before this body in the coming years to address. But it's real, and we know about it, and so those people would also be put in the bind by this amendment. And finally, the last point I'll make, which is, you know, the other work that we do at Legal Aid is we represent people on welfare. And we know that half of the people coming to welfare have just lost a job. A really significant portion of those people coming to welfare who've just lost a job have had an experience at a temp agency or staffing agency. And so while we may be saving the staffing industry some money with this amendment, we're not necessarily saving the state any money when you have these folks coming to welfare, and that's 100% state cost. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. I think there's one more that wanted to say a short comment or two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very short. Brad Leto, Chief of Staff of Minnesota AFL-CIO. Actually, just so you know, we oppose this at this time, but actually we met with Ms. Dolphin and some other folks, Cindy Brooks, last night. I knew about this, basically, not this amendment, but about this issue was mentioned approximately 2 weeks ago or a little less. And then never saw any language till just last Friday or yesterday, actually, this language. In any event, Ray Waldron, Don Gertesmeyer, who are on the UI Advisory Council, which is an advisory group, I should say, and then I sit in as an alternate most of the time. This was not discussed there at all. However, there was a separate staffing provision that is in the department bill that we agreed to, where somebody is gets permanent work, they are where the staffing agency, they get permanent work and then are laid off. That does not count against the staff agency's unemployment rating. And we did put that in. And one of the reasons that we put that in, quite honestly, was because that we agreed because there's a lot of staffing agencies over the years that have had a bad rep, both with us, the National AFL-CIO, and there's a lot of good ones, and we thought this would be something good to help that along. We also committed that we would look at this for next year, because we're not exactly sure what the right way to do anything is. It is the department mentioned it has wider repercussions than otherwise. The staffing agency has mentioned, well, they need it now because they've got bad times. To tell you the truth, so do we. The unemployment rate of union members, any particular trade, ranges from 25% to 40%, with underemployment with all of the trade unions at least 50%. Underemployment working 3 or 4 days a week. Everybody's got bad times, including, I understand, the staffing agencies. And I just think it was a week before deadline, it's a little difficult to try and figure out exactly what the proper way to do this, especially with the other unemployment bills and other issues around. So I guess we would oppose it at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think this is an important issue and needs to be dealt with. However, I think I agree with some of the comments that with the approaching deadline and with the parties that need to be brought together on this, that it would be better served if they worked it out and tried to come back with something maybe next year. So at this time, I ask you, Mr. Chairman, to withdraw the amendment.
Representative Rudolph, I think you have a good point. They've made a pretty decent case that they get kind of the short end of the stick, but then again, these generally take a lot longer to work out than 6 or 8 weeks. So I highly recommend the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the staffing agencies and the people that represent organized labor and just working folks kind of figure this out, because I have a pretty good sense that Masterson and Dolphin are fairly good staffing agencies, and they're getting the bum rap from the ones that are not. So hopefully we come back next year and we can actually give them some relief, and hopefully the department tries to work with them over the interim to give them as much relief as possible. So with that, I will withdraw the amendment. And
one testifier for just on the bill. Short.
You sure you need them? Well, bring your testifier down. But in the meantime, I wanted to make Representative Hilty aware that you have some kids from Princeton High School, and I think that's closer to your district than obviously to mine, so...
Maybe not, Mr. Chair. Kind of a toss-up.
Oh, okay, well... Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape. And
thanks very much. My name is Steve Michael. I work for Dirt Supreme Cabinetry in Howard Lake, Minnesota. That is in Wright County. And I work for the owner of the business. We make semi-custom cabinetry that's distributed throughout the United States. About 550 employees. We're a privately held company, but our revenues are between $50 and $100 million. The program, the shared work program, has been a godsend for our business, both our employees and our business. It allowed us in the past year to retain roughly 100 employees that would have otherwise been laid off by working 4 days a week and taking that fifth day out of our schedule. It allowed us to, and the employees then collect unemployment for that fifth day. It allowed us to keep roughly 100 people on staff with benefits. It's a great program. The flaw in the program, from our perspective, is in the current economic climate, it's not enough. We got kicked out after a year. We have to sit out after 6 months, and so we're facing a potential layoff at this point in time because we don't have the program to offer to our employees.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for the author of the bill or the testifier? I see no questions. So, having seen no questions, all those in favor, I renew my motion to recommend the pass and referring to the Higher Ed Workforce Policy and Finance Division, House File 908. First in Grossman. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? You're on your way.
Thank you very much.
We have Representative Norton. It's House File 1785.
What happened?
Norton.
You need me to move House File 1785?
I was going to say welcome to your committee, and would you care to move your bill?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would like to move 1785, and I believe it will go to Higher Education Workforce Policy and Workforce Development.
That is correct. Now, there's an amendment in the packet.
There is. Could we just discuss the bill first, would you mind?
Certainly.
And I believe one of the members will offer it. And I do have a few handouts, if there's... I didn't have enough for the world, but I think I have enough for committee members, or maybe we can share. Thank you, members and Mr. Chair. I brought forward a bill for your consideration. I'm bringing it partly for two reasons. One, because as I sat through earlier testimony this year, it became clear to me that as a member of this committee and other committees needing to make decisions, particularly this year with regard to budget cuts, that I wasn't being given enough information to help me judge whether recommendations were, well, what decisions were used to make recommendations, frankly, by the department, but also as a member looking at the information as it was presented, there was nothing. There was no clear, consistent manner of comparing programs and their outcomes. And so as I sat through meeting after meeting, I was really struggling with how am I supposed to make an educated decision about which of the programs, workforce development programs and grants, flow-through grants, were having a positive effect, because to hear the reports, all of them were having a positive effect. And so in tough budgetary times, And actually, even in good budgetary times, when we're able to enhance programs, I personally want to enhance programs that are working really well and having great outcomes. And I just wasn't being given the information that I needed as a member to do that. So that was my first impetus. And my second is some work I've done with the Department of Health over the years. And the Department of Health has provides a lot of technical assistance as a department to grantees. They provide kind of almost a format or form that grantees use to help them know what to write in their grants if it's actually a written grant, and in this case it's not always a written grant, but how, what kind of information they need to collect over the course of the year in order to provide information both back to the department and then back to the legislature if requested about successes. And the Department of Health does a really excellent job of that, so I kind of used my experience there to help come up with some language for a bill. I just really believe we as an accountability and oversight legislature and committee need information in order to make good decisions, and I just didn't see us getting it. So I put together this bill, and I'll just quickly tell you what it does. It asks the department, the DEED, to develop a uniform accountability report for economic development or workforce-related programs that are funded yet in whole or part by the state. It asks them to develop a formula for measuring return on investment for the program and grants that are made by the department. And then it asks, on even-numbered years when we're doing our budget as a legislature, it asks them to be able to present to us information, and I provided 7 pieces of information I thought would be helpful. There may well be more, or you may want to remove some, but these were things that I thought would be helpful in those reports to help us make decisions. And then in the end, it has a Subdivision 3 report to the commissioner. But, it should help the division. It should help the commissioner make budget recommendations to the department. It should help us as a legislature make decisions and hopefully provide more transparency to the community as they watch what we're doing. So that's the rationale for my bill. And I do believe there's an amendment which we may want to entertain.
Representative Norton, would you like to move the A1 amendment, which is Representative Poppy? Would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I can certainly do that.
All right. Do you would one of you care to explain the amendment a little bit, or just read it? Because it's pretty simple.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll go ahead and explain it. Actually, Representative Norton and I discussed your bill yesterday, and there was just a piece of it that I felt maybe was lacking, and that would be that people would be aware that there would be some goals and outcomes and ideas about what the grant potential was to be. If they were first coming forward and they wanted to participate, that they would know that there's going to be an expectation that there's an outcome, and that outcome would be based on certain criteria. So I just wanted to be able to put something forth that said it's good to create the reports and develop some uniform standards, but we need to then have the next piece of that, which would say that the grant applicants and recipients would receive that information, and that they also would be able to rely on DEED to be able to receive some technical assistance.
Thank you. Are there any questions to the amendment, or should we just put it on? All those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Bill is the amendment is added in. Are there any questions to the bill, or do you have any other testifiers? I see a couple people behind you.
I will say, Mr. Chair, that when I got this idea, I did meet with Mark Loftus from the department and sent him my concept. He sent back some language, and I sent both my concept and the language to the reviser, and the result is before you. And I won't say that it's perfect. It was a first go at kind of a difficult topic to get our hands around, but I think important to the body. And so it's the first attempt at it. I've taken some input, and perhaps there are changes that can be made between now and its next stop. If people have additions, subtractions that they'd like to discuss, I bring it here for your discussion, and hopefully I'll hear from you.
Thank you, Representative Norton. We've got about 3 so far, and Representative Beard, did you have a question?
I do, to the bill as amended, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this is for Representative Norton or maybe for Mr. Loftus, but first of all, thank you for bringing the bill forward and for putting a measure of accountability on some of these things. Like, you know, some of the heartburn I have over the money we just shovel out the door, but it's nice to have something in place, or will be, to give us an idea of just how well that's working. On page 2 of the bill, point number 4 on line 2.3, I would be interested in knowing this, but I'm wondering if there's some sort of data privacy concerns that would prohibit employers from asking that question, or are we in a box here? Are we putting people in the box that's going to be tricky to get out of, or make them break some other rule?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, thank you for that. I did provide some information of three examples of reports that we've gotten from people, the MEDA program, and I'm not sure that was in this committee, but I think it was in higher ed. The one from OIC, I don't know again if that was here or I think it was here and higher ed. And then the other one is one that's a report that addresses, it's the one that doesn't have a title on it. There's 2 years worth of data. And this one actually comes from the LifeTrack grant that I had for my community. I stole it, a little bit of the money that Vitale had in his, Representative Vitale had in his. And they actually are able...
for that, yes.
Thank you. They're actually, how they reported out is the percent of jobs with health benefits, and that's how they get at that MPIP number.
Oh.
So we may be able to get that information from employers without a data privacy, but perhaps Mr. Loftus has some more to share on that.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm with DEED. I don't know the specific answer to the MPIP question, but I think that in a matter of privacy, we tend to aggregate data anyway to, in terms of overall investment expenditures on the program or people coming out of off of a program or benefiting from it. So it wouldn't be an individual data that would be compromised by that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also appreciate this. I think the Chair and I have had discussions before the start of session concerning the need for some more proven outcomes for the money we spend in this particular area, and so I congratulate you, Representative Norton. This is a good approach. My only concern or question or thought is, as I looked at this bill, was obviously this is another layer of oversight. How much, and perhaps Commissioner Loftus could answer this, is this a lot of extra work? Is it a lot of extra money? Are we going to be asking a lot from the employers? It doesn't seem like it'd be burdensome, but what sort of burden are we talking about?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, we look at across the department. There are a couple of ways we have to approach this. One of them is using our existing data more efficiently, more effectively. We do not believe as a department that we have to add staff to do this. In many cases, it will be working with the grantees or the pass-through recipients, as Representative Poppe and Representative Norton have amended this to say. When I look at, in my own division, for example, we have at least four, besides our own small business services program, we have at least four pass-throughs, some of which we are proposing to cut in the budget bill, as the chairman knows. But even within that small area, it's incumbent on us, and this is why we support this legislation, to work with those administrators to collect data consistently. So if this grantee is counting their business services compared to this one, it may be different than our small business services are counting them. And we think it's proper, and we recognize that if we were in your shoes, how hard it would be to respond to some of the requests we make or the recommendations without being able to compare those things. And that's even true across the business development area and the workforce area. If you put $1 million into this program here, $1 million here, what can you expect? And I can't tell you today that we'd be able to answer that. So that's why we appreciate Representative Norton's concept here that we have some time to work on this.
Well, and I'll take the prerogative of the chair to say that it should not just be on the business end of it. It should be on what's going on with our workforce training, and you know what's the results of the workforce training part of it too. So I hope if that's not in the bill, it is something that we probably need to add between here and there, here in the next committee or the floor or whenever this gets put together. So with that, a follow up.
Just a quick one, Mr. Chair. I think along those lines, it may not be the purview of this committee to take it further, but this concept ought to be in almost every single thing we do as a state. When we're spending state dollars, we ought to have some way of analyzing this. How many times does it happen where we ask commissioners or departments in committee, what are we getting for the dollars, and we don't really get good answers and good data about it? So,
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Loftus, it says in the bill here that you are required to develop a formula for measuring the return on investment. Do you have something in place or something that you've got in your mind that you're looking at, or you're talking at, looking at something else to use in doing this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I can speak best to what I know within business and community development, and that's that we will
we will develop a per dollar return, perhaps, but when we make investment in small business services or community infrastructure financing, you'd be able to say that among the group of small, let's say, community infrastructure programs, that based on that dollar of investment, you could expect a return of X dollars in tax base or X dollars in private leverage in a way that we have some of those measures now. We do some of that. We gave that to the chairman in response to an earlier hearing. So it's connecting. It's not only saying that we had 425 beneficiaries last year, or we made 14 grants for $10 million, but be able to track the dollars invested against the outcomes that you track.
Mr. Loftus and Representative Anderson, I certainly hope, and I think what Representative Norton can speak to this, but my hope with this kind of a reporting request is, how many people have a job 6 months, a year later, 18 months later? How many people started out at $7.50 an hour, and after the first year they're making $9.50 an hour without benefits? That's kind of the information, so that we as a committee, we as a legislature, can determine, are we spending our money in its best fashion? Hopefully it goes more than just because we all see for every state dollar you spend, you get $10 back. Well, I think there's more than a dozen accountant schools in the state, and somebody's got to keep them employed. So,
and Mr. Chair, if I could comment on that, it is one of the reasons why I've listed some things that, as a legislator would be helpful to me, and the department needs to get kind of together with that. They may want more or less than I've asked for. This is kind of the minimum, and I'm certainly open to changes on that. But if you look on the OIC, they have a public dollar return on the investment of $21.85. The MEDA one says $11 for every dollar invested. The one for LifeTrack doesn't have a return on investment stated, but they tell you how many people are off MFIP. And I would like a way for us to measure, and you may have to have different measures to get at what, the complexity of it, but that they're apples to apples, because I don't know on these. This is more information than we get for most of our programs, but I don't know if I have to decide on a $21 return or $11, and I've got to spend more money, I'm going to spend it on the $21 one, unless, but these may not be apples to apples, so my hope is we can get an apples to apples comparison, and maybe they will have to disaggregate it in multiple ways based on some of the suggestions that Mr. Loftus just said. I don't personally have the answer for that. I'm hoping their department will have the expertise to come up with that methodology.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton or Mr. Loftus, do we have a uniform system in place technology-wise to take care of all this? I was just talking with the department this morning, different departments within the state, and they said their technology is not up to speed, and that they're not where they can to meet today's requirements. And I'm just saying, okay, if that's evident in one area of state government, why maybe it's we're lacking here too. I'm just thinking.
You look like you brought somebody else up to handle the IT question.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob Isaacs, and I am with DEED as well. I oversee the Communications Analysis and Research Division. To your Mr. Chair, to your point, Representative, we have been working long and hard at trying to develop one system to help us better understand outcomes with workforce development divisions, and that's really a challenge because there's so many different federally and state-funded programs, and try to create a system that creates an apples-to-apples outcome basis has been challenging, and there's lots of different types of systems, like systems that have been mandated by the federal government over the years. What we've tried to do is bring them together into one system to help us better measure and understand the outcomes of these programs. Within the Business and Community Development Division, Mr. Loftus's division, we have an existing system that we'll be using for this as well. So I think we're in pretty good shape to move forward with this, and we're, I think, excited to do this. I might mention, Mr. Chair, years ago we had an agency performance report mandated by all agencies to be completed every year. I think it ran from about 98 to 2003, 2004. And one of the reasons, as I understand, that agency performance report was eliminated was they got to be very long and lengthy and very difficult to really get any kind of understanding of what the success of programs were or the failures of programs. what we see from this is really trying to simplify that, trying to get a real succinct description of the outcomes associated with, so you as decision makers can better understand the apples and apples, failures and successes of individual programs in a quick, tiny document.
We like that quick and tiny. Mr. Loftus, did you want to add anything?
No. Mr. Isaacson is our expert on data collection and measurement, so I defer to him.
And just so Representative Anderson understands where they're going to get the money to improve their IT, they're going to increase my typefitter's license another $20 on top of the $20 that they did it a while ago, and I still haven't gotten any. They've actually reduced the number of services I get from them. So, having said all that, unless you have a follow-up,
Mr. Chair, just one follow-up on this here for Mr. Isaacs. The department that I just met with was saying that they get millions of information that come into their department from across the state, and they come from different, from local government, from city government, from county government, and to try and put that all together, and then on top of that, they get the federal government and stuff. And I'm just, and they're not only looking at today to try and bring that into compact, but they're also looking at future to bring that as we move it. And I'm just wondering, it sounds like you've got a pretty good grasp on it right now. I'm just wondering how your future looks for IT wise in doing this also as we go down the line.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the system that I spoke to is something that's just been developed, so we're in pretty good shape for the current and the near future. Now, as we try to better understand some of our partners' performance, that's going to take a little bit more integration with our computer systems, but I think we have a good foundation from which to work.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess two ideas that I just shared with Representative Norton. One is that currently the Department of Administration has an Accountability Minnesota, I think that's what it's called, basically website for each state agency to put performance measures online in a pretty accessible format. One provision you may want to add is to require that this be part of any kind of public accountability measurement system that's out there. Because right now, admin basically lets each agency define the content that they want to put on the website. So one kind of one-stop shop, I guess, for that information. But each agency decides on its own. So you may want to consider putting that as part of that. And the other thing is, we have in section in 1.23 and 1.24, you talk about wages, but there's no language here about wage growth. And I'm thinking that for some of the workforce development thing, new jobs might not be as good an issue or as good a measurement as wage growth as a result of some of those programs. So that may be one if you want to add to the bill. Oh, and then just finally a comment, which is that, you know, the caution with the return on investment of public dollars put in is that, you know, you're assuming that that dollar wouldn't be in the private economy and used in some other way. But this, I think, is very helpful because you're at least comparing all public sector dollars and how they're spent to at least compare across programs, which I think would be very helpful.
Mrs. Bryant?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Norton, I want to compliment you for this work. I think it's an excellent example of oversight and legislative responsibilities. I'm very excited about it. But I have a suggestion, a combination question, and I guess I would like to ask you if you've run this by any academicians, any of our consultants, university professors who testified to us earlier. I'll let you respond to that, and then I'll follow up.
I haven't, but certainly would be open to that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is my suggestion, and my reasoning is along the lines of much of the discussion that's been at the table now, and that's you're looking for comparable measures, best practice and accountability, and Mr. Isaacs may have his handle on some of this, but we have people out there in our state who specialize in reviewing these measures and we're sort of doing our best to pick what we think are the best, most applicable measures. But indeed, there may be studies out there that could help guide us in having the true apples-to-apples measure, some suggestions on the formula that, you know, have withstood some tests of reliability and validity and so forth. So I'd encourage you, we have those email addresses. You could shoot this off to them and get some quick feedback, and I think it could be helpful to us.
Thank you. I think that's a wonderful idea, and I'll do that between now and its next stop.
Representative Donald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly on that point, not that I want to disparage academicians, but there are a lot of communities around the state, economic development partnerships and groups like that, that have developed some standards already about when they provide funds, how they provide them, how they measure return on investment. We ought to include that kind of thing, too. I don't want to make this a huge, burdensome bureaucratic process, but there are some best practices out there that we could borrow from for state government, and not all of them are in academia. Some of them are in practice in the private sector and in public-private partnerships.
Lots of places where you find best practices that might work in here. See no further questions. All those in favor of Representative Norton, will you renew your motion to pass and return to the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division?
So moved.
As amended?
As amended.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. It passes. Thank you. Having no other business before the committee, we're adjourned.